This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our August 21st, 2017 edition of Invest Talk, and I'm happy you all could be with me on this Monday. I hope everyone had a fun weekend and enjoyed the eclipse this morning. It was quite the day, pretty interesting. Hasn't happened very often. I think it's going to be another 8 years before this happens, so I hope everyone enjoyed it and got outside and enjoyed nature for a minute. But we're back at it on this edition of Invest Talk, and our goal, as always, is to help you become a better than average investor. Try to rise above the ranks, and it can be difficult from time to time to handle the emotions and swings of the market. But you know, it's something that is necessary if you are going to be successful. And when I say necessary, I mean the handling of the emotions, the ebbs and flows, and keeping a tight eye on valuations and making sound investment decisions based on facts, not hyperbole, not hype, not just what you saw in the newspaper or on TV, right? Doing your own research. So we are here to be a forum for you, an open forum, and everyone is welcome. Whether you're new to investing or maybe you have some experience, all kinds of money questions are welcome. We try to answer your questions live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour. Or you can always leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART, and we'll get to that in a moment. Now today, we're going to talk about the ETF way to hedge against volatility. How can you still keep your money working for you, but hedging against volatility and still trying to earn something while reducing risk at the same time, maybe diversifying your portfolio as well? So that's our main talking point today. But before we go any further, we're going to check in with our 24-hour listener line. It's open for your questions anytime you want. You can ask them.
Hello, Steve and Justin. I'm a podcast listener from Arizona, and I just had two questions. First, what do you think, if I would consider myself to be a value investor and have most of my portfolio made up of value-type stocks, do you think there's anything wrong with having, you know, 10% or just a couple stocks that are more growth-oriented? And along those lines, I was wondering what your thoughts were on CRTO, what your thoughts were on, you know, a good entry point, and if it's a stock that I think has some room to grow. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, this is CRTO, Critio SA. I'm not sure the, let's see what the Critio is. A technology company providing digital performance marketing. It sells internet display advertisement featuring product level recommendations, either directly to clients or to advertising agencies. So it's in the advertising space. It is growing pretty dramatically. Revenue is growing about 33% year over year last quarter. Earnings were up 18% last quarter, but that's a pretty marked decline in growth from 182% in September quarter, the third quarter of last year. So it's certainly growth is slowing down to some degree. P ratio is 22. Let me look at it based on some operating earnings yield, 3.4, pretty low. Revenues, like I said, growing 33%. So it's doing fairly well, but growth is slowing down, and I think that's why you're starting to see weakness in the stock. So to me, it's not cheap enough, and I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to find times to get into good growth names. But when the chart is this weak, this would not be a name that I would be investing in. You know, when you're looking at growth names, you're looking at a higher risk area of the market, right? I've talked before about how when growth is strong, the price momentum of those stocks tend to be pretty powerful. And when you have strong and steady charts and strong charts, you can buy into that and ride that momentum. But when things start to get weaker in the growth sector, which you've seen over the past 3 or 4 months now, this is when risk becomes very elevated. And all of a sudden, that price movement can reverse rather quickly. And I think that's what you're seeing in this name and a lot of other types of growth stocks as well. So there's weakness here. And you got to remember, advertising is the most sensitive to the economic cycle. Because when companies are struggling, when sales are falling, they tend to scrutinize their advertising spends a little bit more, right? They reduce some. They maybe reduce maybe the things they weren't sure that were working that great, or eliminate them entirely. When things are great, they kind of spend a little more freely on advertising because it eventually all of it tends to be working. But when the economy is not as great, they tend to scrutinize their advertising budgets a little bit more. And that's why advertising type companies, Facebook's of the world, Google's of the world, this company, it's a French company, is Criteo, is more sensitive to the economic cycle and why you've seen weakness in those areas as well. So this is not a name I'd be investing in now. Certainly not a bad company. It has strong revenue momentum, and I think that's for a reason. They certainly have some traction and some products that seem to resonate well with the market. But it's not super cheap by any means. So I would wait here, keep on your watch list. It's a good stock, but I would be I would pick this up probably closer. Right now it's at $47.79. In the high 30s, I would like it. I would like it in that area. But right now, I would be patient and hold off on it. But there's nothing wrong with having a small portion of your portfolio in growth stocks as long as the technicals line up with the growth in their business. Now, with interest rates so low, investors are constantly searching for yield. And this chase for cash flow pushes people into areas of the market that are not only risky, but into assets whose tax treatments that are atypical for the average dividend payer, like big blue chip multinational companies, right? The Procter & Gamble's of the world, the Exxon Mobil's of the world, their dividends are taxed a special rate. But there are multiple asset classes that have special tax treatments for dividends that are paid out to investors. And you have to adjust for that. And this is something you probably want to know more about. And here are the most popular ones investors should know about. Foreign companies. Dividends are taxed as qualified dividends, you know, 15-20%, your standard tax rate for most dividends. But there is something called a foreign tax withholding, meaning the domiciling country where that business is headquartered, tends to want to take a cut as well. They can hold up to 15% or more of the dividend. Now, in a normal taxable account, you're able to recover that charge through what is called a foreign tax credit when you file your taxes. But in a tax-deferred account, such as an IRA or a 401k, there's no way to recoup those withholdings, those tax withholdings. So understand that little bit of difference. It may not be a giant difference, but it's something to consider if you have multiple accounts and you're figuring out which one to buy a foreign company in. Now, some companies, foreign companies, are domiciled in countries where there isn't a foreign tax holding because we have an agreement with them. Meaning the United States has a special agreement with that country. So look into that. Master limited partnerships. This is big because we see a lot of people interested in the space, especially because they've declined so much. Not only are they very risky in general as a sector, but the dividends are taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. Not only that, but the government treats income from MLPs as unrelated business taxable income. And if you hold too much of that income in a tax-deferred account like an IRA or a 401k, you'll have to file a separate tax return on behalf of that account. It becomes very messy. So keep that in mind when you are investing in MLPs, master limited partnerships, or any type of limited partnership within a retirement account. Then lastly, real estate investment trusts. Now, the biggest difference in income from REITs versus typical dividends is that income is taxed at, once again, an ordinary income tax rate. So this makes it even more advantageous to own within a tax-deferred account like an IRA or 401k, because there are no taxes, right? Which your ordinary income tax tends to be higher than that 15 or 20% long-term capital gains rate or qualified dividend rate. So while tax rates are not the most exciting part in the investment world, they still need to be taken into account, especially when you're trying to go after some sort of yield, because that ultimately dictates how much finally goes into your wallet. So do you want to talk about that or anything else money related? Give me a call right now at 888-99-CHART. It's how to get your voice heard. Bring your question. And then we're going to get back to the phones in a little bit. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. That's how to get through right now. Let's talk about your money on a Best Talk. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks for taking the call, Justin.
No problem. Thanks for
I have a general question. Historically, mm-hmm. in the month of August, September, mm-hmm. is a down trend in the market. Everybody talks about it.
Yeah,
what
well,
is the
it's
cyclical
it's,
reason that what, market is down generally during this time.
No one really knows the reason why. There's some cyclicality to it. July often is a very pivotal month in the market. For multiple reasons that I don't want to get into, but July is often typically a pivotal month, and I think you've seen that so far this year. It's something I was talking about in June and July as well. Later in July, I was expecting kind of a pivot in the market, and you're starting to see that. And so I think you just tend to get a downtrend after the late summer. Could be people on vacation, less buyers. There could be a lot of reasons. Maybe the market's waking up to the full year earnings expectations now that the full half the year is over and adjusting to those costs or those investments or earnings. Sorry. And so, what's the reason? I don't know. I don't know the exact reason. There can be many theory. There are many theories of why. But there's really not one answer for it. It's not necessarily that over the long term they're down. They tend to be bigger down months, but on average they're still positive months, August and September. But they are 2 months where you see often a lot of losses in certain years.
I see. So does it mean that looking at this data that August, September is the time when if you're dollar cost averaging at the end, I mean, you hold down on that and then start resume that activity post September?
Well, in certain years, yes, that's true. But like I said, on average, August and September are still up. Okay. They may be the weakest two positive months of the year. I know September. I believe September is the least positive month for the year on average. But on average, every month of the year is positive. So it's I don't know if that's the greatest strategy. I wouldn't pause every year or anything like that. I think that's being too cute. If you're dollar cost averaging, dollar cost averaging is just being consistently putting money into the market and investments on a regular basis. And I think when you start to get cute like that, you're breaking the power of that strategy. Thanks for the call, BJ. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. Don't hold back. Get in touch. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me directly, 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk. It at 99 chart, it at 992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, a 5% correction in the market has not been experienced in almost 18 months, moving many to start investing in low volatility funds. Now, is it time to put a hedge on is the question. And how do you do that using ETFs? So we're going to talk about that. It's one of our main talking points. I also want to get to the P ratio on the Russell 2000. There's a couple of figures that are put out by Russell who's the maker of the Russell 2000 index, and iShares, who has the most popular Russell 2000 ETF, which is IWM, they quote the PE on the index differently, and it's vastly different than the actual PE ratio. I'm going to tell you why. Also, where should you invest your emergency savings? Should you put it in the stock market? We're going to talk about that. Then lastly, healthcare costs in retirement. How do you think about it? How do you approach it? And how do you plan for it? So those are things I want to talk about, but ultimately it's up to you. It's what's on your mind. It's your show. It's your hour. I guess about 35 minutes left in the show, so get your call in sooner rather than later. Ask your question. Now, first, let's talk about the market today. We had the S&P up 3, Dow up 30, NASDAQ down 3. Really just kind of a flat market overall. Really nothing doing after a really bad week last week, and we closed near the lows last week. And so what I was talking about in June, in early July, about the rollover in the market, expecting starting late July, is starting to finally come to fruition over the last couple weeks. And I think you're going to continue to see that into October, maybe even into November. So once again, still time to reduce risk, reduce the volatility of your portfolio. And if you need help with that, you know we're here to give us a call, review your portfolio, etc. Now let's go to Wendy in Chino Hills. How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Justin?
Great. What can I do for you?
Today's question is regarding Priceline Group.
Mm-hmm.
I want to find a good buying point. And also, how come like some of the stocks is like $20 and this is like $1,000? Does that like... It depends on like the length of the stock, and they were staying around like 1,000 for a long time already. So,
So this is a standard mistake that most normal investors new investors tend to make. Is they look at the price of a stock and they compare it to the price of another stock and think there's some sort of relation to the value in the marketplace. And the fact is, there simply isn't. It's just one maybe had a split or multiple splits and the other one didn't. Priceline just hasn't split their shares in, I don't know, ever, maybe. I have to go back and look. So it really has simply to do with that. You know, this market cap's $88 billion. And Apple's price, you know, it's an $1,800 stock. Apple's price is, what's Apple's price right now? $157 a share, and it's $811 billion. So it's 10 times as large, but the price is only $157. So that price that you see on the screen of a stock has only one really applicable way or use. And that is to compare it to the earnings per share, okay? And so that's what you have to look at. So completely ignore the absolute price of any stock, okay? And you have to look at what is the price of that stock in relation to the earnings that it's producing. Now, this has weakened, and it's all 52-week high. It's about 13% off that. The 52-week high is 2,067, so call it $68. Now it's at 1,800. I wouldn't buy this until about $1,200 or $1,300 a share. It's still overvalued. This is another example of growth kind of slowing and growth stocks weakening overall. And so it's certainly a good company. They have good metrics long term, good cash flow. It's a good business, but it's certainly cyclical, right? It's in the travel and leisure business. And that's starting to roll over a little bit. And that's why you see the stock rollover. So a good company to have in your watch list, but I wouldn't buy it until much, much lower.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem, Wendy. Thanks for calling. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That was priceline.com. PCLN is the symbol. should be on everyone's watch list. Great company, good profitability. And you know what? This is why I say it's a good company. You look at the profitability metrics, return on invested capital, always been in the teens, into the 20% range. And it's right now it's near the low end. So that's one of the reasons it's rolling over as well. So the profitability looks to be declining, maybe for multiple reasons. Maybe Airbnb is having some pressure on their business, etc. So that's one reason why it's rolling over, but the profitability is still sound. They don't have a lot of debt, good cash flows, consistent cash flows. And so I like the name, but it's got to be at the right price, just like any investment. Now we're at the halfway mark. What money matters are on your mind? And managing money is more than just investing. We're going to talk about real estate, putting kids through college, etc. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
We'll continue with our podcast in a moment. Some say it really wasn't what I expected. We're talking about a portfolio checkup with Steve. Over the years, Steve has met with hundreds of InvestTalk listeners for these friendly discussions about their retirement accounts. And I guess you could say he meets people where they are. Whether it's all buttoned down or more like a collection of leftovers, there may be stocks and funds that have no business still being part of the mix. Times change, lives change, portfolios need to change. If you feel your retirement portfolio has lost direction, is kind of overgrown and needs pruning, or maybe you're ready for a complete makeover, why not get together with Steve in person in California or by Skype or phone from anywhere? Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. And there's no charge. You're listening to Invest Talk. And once again, here's financial advisor Justin Klein, ready for your money question right now. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question in the last half hour of the show. We officially entered the back half, so give us a call if you have a question. Now, the CBOE Volatility Index was just a couple weeks ago, was just 2 points away from an all-time low of 8.84 back in July, actually. And we haven't experienced a large correction in the market in 18 months. It's really been a stair step higher ever since the market bottomed last February time frame. And the average retail investor's cash exposure dropped to the lowest level since 2000. The year 2000. We all know what happened that year. Now, you've seen billionaire investors like Howard Marks and Jeffrey Gundlach talking about how stocks are very pricey and they're priced as high as they were around the dot-com bubble. And this has pushed many investors to start investing in low volatility funds. Low volatility focused mutual funds and ETFs saw net inflows of $1.5 billion in the first 7 months of the year. Now, on August 8th, U.S. equities dropped pretty dramatically just a few weeks ago. And $1.2 billion came out of the SP 500 ETF. And so you're starting to see volatility rise a little bit. And the big question is, how do you defend against it? Now, you obviously could buy short ETFs, right? You could buy long volatility ETFs. You could short individual stocks. You could buy things like market neutral funds, which go long certain companies and short others. Kind of like a pair trade where you don't have much exposure either way, but your hope is that the longs go up more than the shorts do in, you know, times when the market's up, and vice versa. The longs go down less than the shorts go down during times when the market goes down. And that's how market neutral funds tend to make money. Then there's neutral momentum ETF. This is going long high momentum stocks and short the lowest momentum stocks. It's another potential strategy that's out there. There's also long short commodity ETFs as well. doing the same type of thing, going long commodities that are in bullish trends and short ones that are in bearish trends. So these are all different types of ETFs that you can explore. And this is really about hedging against the market. And there's different ways that you can do it. Buying individual shorts on indexes, that's a little bit higher risk. Buying these market neutral funds, you know, that's a lower risk way of doing it. But ultimately, it's about diversification, diversifying your strategy. Don't lean on one or the other. Buying gold, gold ETFs, gold miners. It's another way that you can hedge against volatility. So I hope that helps you understand how to maybe de-risk your portfolio overall. Let's go to Bobby in Atlanta. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Dustin. Good. How you doing?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Hey, I got two symbols, but if you cannot get to another one, it's okay. I was looking at ExxonMobil. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's a good entry point for long term?
For long term, you know, I actually do think oil stocks are near a short to medium term low. Some of it's pessimism. There's a ton of pessimism in the industry right now. Another is the dollar. The dollar is weak and it remains weak, and that tends to boost the price of commodities in general, especially oil. And Exxon's declined pretty dramatically, right? Its 52-week high is 93, and it's about 18% off of that high, which is a pretty big move for a big blue chip company like ExxonMobil. But its market cap still $323 billion. It's starting to turn around its profits, mainly because of the turnaround in oil prices. Its dividend yield's about 4%, and that is it's stretched at this point, to be frank. You're at 108% payout ratio, 97% cash dividend payout ratio. So I don't think there's much growth in that dividend, if at all. So don't expect dividend growth, I would say, for a while, I think, until oil gets well above probably $60 a barrel. Is it cheap right now? You know, enterprise value to EBITDA is 10. Is that the lowest it's ever been? Absolutely not. You know, in 2012, it was as low as 4. So it certainly has a ways to go before it's historically cheap. You know, to me, it's an okay value long term. It's not great. It's not expensive. It's not super cheap. It's just kind of in the middle. So I think you'll do okay with it long term. But, you know, I can't say this is like a great, great buying opportunity. I just think it's down and it's much cheaper than it was 6 months ago. But it's not a screaming buy at this point.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
No. Thanks for the call, Bobby.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. 8899 chart. We are here for you, beginner or experienced investor at 8899-CHART. Now, when you approach retirement, there are some complex decisions to make about your home, selling it, downsizing it, fix it up. Now you have another source for answers for any real estate related questions. Just get me a note. I am our onboard licensed real estate consultant at KPP Financial. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com and I'll get right back to you.
A survey showed that 73% of investors say keeping my money safe is more important to me than trying to generate returns. Well, Steve takes risk management seriously too, and that's why during his portfolio reviews, he examines retirement accounts with risk in mind, managing it to protect investors' future. Steve schedules just a few of these individual checkups each month. If you'd like to reserve your hour with Steve on Skype or telephone, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
8899 chart, 8899-242-7-8. Now, the Russell 2000 is one of the broadest indexes in the marketplace today. Why? Because it has 2,000 names. OK, Okay. S&P 500 has 500, obviously. Dow has only 30. The NASDAQ 100 obviously only has 100. So Russell 2000 was one of the broadest indexes out there, kind of small and mid-cap names. So certainly the higher risk of the major indexes that you might see out there in the marketplace on a regular basis. Now, the big question is it expensive and how expensive is it? Well, if you take Russell's word for it, the P ratio on the S&P or the Russell 2000 is 25.6, which is high but not exorbitant, especially for smaller cap names that tend to have better growth than average. If you take iShares' word for it, which issues or is the issuer of the ETF, the popular ETF IWM, they have the P ratio at 19.8, which that's actually relatively cheap long-term for the Russell 2000. And the big question is are those correct? And the answer is absolutely not. In no way, shape, or form, it is. Not that they're pulling the wool over anybody's eyes, because they do disclose it, but they have a huge omission. They omit a third, nearly a third, of the companies in the Russell 2000 index. And why is that? Because they're losing money. So they're acting like if you invest in the Russell 2000, that you're not buying into those third of companies that aren't making any money. Well, the reality is you are, right? You're still buying all 2,000 companies. And if you adjust, you subtract out the losses from that third of the index, what's the P today? Well, it's extremely high. It's 78.7. Yeah, you heard me right. 78.7. Now you go, okay, that sounds very high. How does that relate to previous maybe highs in the Russell 2000 P ratio? Well, at the end of 2007, near the last market top, it was about 60. Okay, now it's at 78.7. What was it in 1999? The end of 1999. It was about 55. So it's extremely, extremely extended from a valuation perspective. Now, obviously, I'm the first one to tell you that P ratio is very simplified, overly simplified in many cases, I would agree. And it is only one factor that should take in it should take into account for valuation when you're looking at any index, any individual company. So it's certainly not the end-all, be-all of metrics to look at. But it is a worrying indicator of just how expensive the Russell 2000, one of the broadest indexes in the marketplace today, is. Now, when you look at the earnings yield of the Russell 2000, which is simply the inverse of the P ratio, okay, E divided by P, right? P is P divided by E. Earnings yield is E divided by P. So it's just the inverse of the P ratio. It would be 1.3%, okay? Just for clarification, if the P ratio was 20, the earnings yield would be 5% inverse. If the P ratio was 100, that earnings yield would be 1. Now, the earnings yield of 1.3 on the Russell 2000 is much, much lower than the 2.2% yield on the 10-year Treasury rate. And that is atypical. Because why? Because the Treasury rate's theoretically risk-free. And the Russell 2000 is very, very high risk. So this is one indicator of why the market is extremely extended and overvalued at this point. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hey, guys. My name is Robert. I listen to your show every day. And I just had a question about what is the difference in your portfolio between leveraging and margin? I just wanted to hear your guys' breakdown of it. Thank you very much.
There isn't much of a difference. Margin is leverage. When you use margin, you're using leverage. But there's other ways to get leverage or theoretical leverage. There's using options is a one way to add leverage to your account, up and down. There's using ETFs that use leverage, typically more than you can use by just using margin, right? You can only borrow 50% of your account on margin, whereas, so it's a 50% leverage, right? 0.5 or 1.5 times exposure to whatever you're in. And a lot of ETFs today, you have double leverage, triple leverage ETFs, both long and short for various indexes, et cetera. They're even coming out, I think, a 4x leverage ETF, which I think is kind of reckless, and there's no need for it. But I believe they're coming out with that soon. So that's really the difference. They're kind of the same thing, but margin is just one way to gain leverage, but there are other ways to use or gain leverage within a position. Hope that clarifies it. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART. Are we going to a call? All right, here we go.
Hi, I had a question about placing certain types of orders. There's things like limit orders and stop limit orders. I was wondering, when is it best to use a limit order over a stop limit or vice versa? If you could please answer this question, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, a limit order is probably best when you're dealing with either A, an illiquid security, or going into like an earnings announcement. And the reason is because a limit order will, based on a certain price, so let's say your limit order was at 20. Say it's a buy limit order. And you want to buy it at $20 a share. Maybe it's trading at $22 a share. If you have a limit order, actually, let's go with a sell. Let's go with a sell limit order. It's 22. You don't want to be in it if it goes below 20, right? And it's illiquid, and it starts to fall, and it triggers it. But guess what? It goes straight through that price, right? You're going to put that order in at 20, and it might go straight through that price. It might gap through that price, and you're sitting there at 20. And it just keeps going down and down and down, and your price is at 20, and you never got it. Whereas a stop limit will create a market order and it'll just sell it. Now, if it's super illiquid or maybe it gaps below it on earnings, something like that, you might get a much lower price than 20. So that's when you gotta know the difference in what you're entering. And there are many different reasons why one could be better than the other, but simply you need to just understand the concept of what each one does. A limit order puts in a limit, stop limit order puts a stop limit price. Stop order puts a market order in. Okay? Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left, so if you're going to call, probably do it sooner rather than later. Now, most financial advisors like myself recommend that you keep about 3 to 6 months worth of expenses for emergencies, in an emergency fund. Now, I see a lot of people that are wondering how to get some more yield out of their emergency fund, right? It's sitting in a savings account earning 0.01%. It might be up now a little bit because of the Fed raising interest rates, but you're still earning probably 0.5% at best in a savings account. And it can be frustrating to watch your money earning next to nothing. Now, the big question is, should you put that in the stock market? And the simple answer is no. And why is that? Well, because when the markets go down, what tends to happen? Markets are down because of usually a recession, a rougher economy, and layoffs increase, which means at the exact time that you probably need the money, you could be seeing a 20, 30, 40% decline in your savings that you need to live on. And usually, the market's down before then, right? The market is a predictive indicator. So the market declines at that rate, it means it's a leading indicator that 3, 6, 9 months from now, we probably hit a recession, layoffs are likely going to increase, and the odds are increasing that you're going to get laid off as well, which is the main reason why you have an emergency fund. So where should you keep your money? Well, I think first is an online savings account, an FDIC-insured online bank. There's plenty of those out there nowadays. They tend to pay higher interest rates than local banks because they don't have the overhead of branches, right, like a typical bank might have. That's one place you can put the money. Then there's money market accounts, and those are pretty similar to an online savings account, but many come with additional liquidity by allowing you to write checks straight from the account. Many offer no minimum balances, maintenance fees, etc. And they're 100% safe and liquid, never decrease in value because they're FDIC insured. And that's really where you should be. It could be CDs that you're in. That's another avenue. Ladder CDs out, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months maybe. And keep rolling them over every time they mature. That might give you a little bit more yield. Now, some might say you go into a balanced mutual fund where you have some bonds, some stocks, and that's not a terrible way to go. It's certainly much safer than just buying pure equities, a pure index fund. But even balanced funds have risk involved. So look what that balanced fund did in 2008, and if you can afford that type of drop from 2007 high to 2009 low, the odds are that balanced fund might be okay or enough risk, low enough risk for you to invest in. 8899 Chart is how we reach us 24 hours a day. So let's get to one of our callers, Rick in Whittier.
I've got a question about book value. I've often heard you mention it, and I was wondering, how do you use that? What is it that we're looking for, and what does it really mean? Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, now, book value is the theoretical value of the company if you liquidated all the assets. Okay, and this is a typical value investing approach to investing. Benjamin Graham, in his book The Intelligent Investor, talked about it extensively and wanted to buy the company below book value, meaning you have a large margin of safety. If you need to liquidate the entire company, then you're going to get more than you paid for it. Now, in today's market, that's very different. It's very hard to find that. And there's a lot of accounting gimmicks that change the way book value looks on the balance sheet versus what it is in reality, both to the downside and the upside. To the downside because of a big write-offs for tax purposes, and can be to the upside if things are just held on the balance sheet fully depreciated for a long time. So there's different ways to look at it, and you need to be a little bit more adept than reading a balance sheet to understand that. But it is a metric, but not the only metric to use. Time's up for the hour. Reminder that Steve will be in San Jose this week, Wednesday, August 23rd, in a couple days, to visit with listeners for informal retirement reviews. He has one slot open on that day, so to reserve your hour with him, just go to investtalk.com, click on the portfolio review button. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasy and the whole KPP family, thanks for being with us. Join us for Invest Talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities.